Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Hillary Walsh, and I represent petitioner Hipólito Bihar Duran. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
This case, thank you, Your Honor. This case is about a Mexican cartel's persecution and torture of Mr. Bihar, a Mexican man who came to the United States to seek asylum. He's been detained in Eloy, Arizona for 2 years. He was persecuted because he is the cousin of a rival drug dealer, Manuel. The underlying facts.
In the IJ's opinion, the IJ concludes that there is no evidence in this record that one of the reasons why the cartel harmed or is seeking to harm the respondent is because he is Manuel's cousin. Is that conclusion supported by substantial evidence?
No, Your Honor. The record compels the court find that at a minimum there's a reason. And it is our position today that the record compels that it is a central reason. I'd like to take the court to administrative record page 151. Specifically, this is the evening of the eighth day of captivity, where Mr. Bihar and the other captives are in the mango orchard, and they're all lined up execution style on their knees, topless, with their handcuffs behind their back, hoods over their eyes, and the leader of the cartel arrives. And the first and only words out of his mouth are, "Who's Manuel's cousin?" Mr. Bihar is identified, and the cartel leader approaches him and says, "Because you're Manuel's cousin, I'm not going to kill you today. But I need you to make me a promise. You're going to help find him, and I give you 2 months. Are you in or are you out?" Understandably, Mr. Bihar agrees. And then the cartel leader says to him, "I'm going to show you now what happens if you break your promise." And this is then when the horrific events transpire regarding the dismembering of this other man from Topeak. The record is replete with other instances of who's Manuel's cousin. So even if we just take this one isolated event, there is evidence in this record. Where the IJ said there's no evidence, there is evidence in this record, highly proving the A reason Mr. Bihar was targeted was because he's Manuel's cousin. A central reason, indeed. This harkens back to Bringus Rivas, which I know Judge Wardlaw, you're intimately familiar with as you wrote the en banc decision, where the government argued on appeal that Mr. Bringus had not been targeted as a child and horrible things happened to him as a child because of his homosexuality, but it was instead because of the perverse interests of those who were molesting him and raping him as a child. This court found otherwise. This court found that instead, a central reason, but for Mr. Bringus's homosexuality, he would not have been targeted. The same is true here. But for Mr. Bihar being Manuel's cousin, repeatedly throughout the record, it shows that he was beaten more than the other people who were held captive with him. They came to him and they said, "We're coming at you. We're doing this to you because you're Manuel's cousin." There's no other reason that's given. Importantly, the IJ didn't enter an adverse credibility finding here, and so Mr. Bihar's testimony must be taken as credible and all reasonable inferences drawn from it. So the record does indeed compel a different outcome.
Does it matter at all that that Ronaldo, who is not related to Manuel,
yes, Judge.
That he was also picked up and beaten and sent out to find out where Manuel was?
Thank you for asking that, Judge, because it's so important that that is clarified here today. The record never says, no one ever says anywhere in this whole record that Reynaldo was picked up, was targeted, was persecuted, was tortured because he knew Manuel. The only information that the record speaks to is that Reynaldo and Mr. Bihar were released at the same time, that they both know Manuel, and that contrary to the leader telling Mr. Bihar, "I need you to promise to do this to me, otherwise look what's going to happen to you," the record shows that they told Reynaldo, "Keep an ear out. If you know anything, give us a call." Totally different circumstance. If we look at why they were targeted.
I mean, that's a decent argument for reading the record the other way, but why isn't it enough for the agency to say that where the testimony is that the cartel leaders said when Ronaldo was released at the same time that if he heard anything to call about Manuel, why doesn't that support an inference that that was, given the release at the same time, the similar instruction, that that was the reason why Ronaldo was held, and that that supports an inference that it was not due to the cousin relationship as opposed to the knowledge of Manuel?
Because the inference of why he was targeted does not exist. Record evidence does not exist as to why Ronaldo was targeted. Why he was released, sure, because we want you to help find Manuel.
Well, it's but not the asylum standard. My point is, does it support a circumstantial inference that when they released at the same time with similar instructions, that they were detained for the same reason?
It does not, Your Honor. We have no record evidence shows why he was detained to begin with. The government and the agency have repeatedly written this into the record, and it does not exist. We know why they were released at the same time. They both apparently knew Manuel, but the record is replete with instances for why Mr. Dihar was targeted. It's important to note here also that the immigration judge and government counsel all agreed that Mr. Dihar was persecuted in the past. This is significant. This man faced past persecution. And the reason for it, the record goes over and over and over why it occurred. And to say that there's no evidence, to come to the conclusion that there's no evidence, and instead weave Reynaldo's release into this, discounts all of Mr. Ippolito's credible testimony and all the inferences that are to be followed with his testimony. Indeed, even Dr. Shirk's testimony addresses, in his expert opinion, that the reason Mr. Dihar was targeted was because he has a familial relationship with Manuel. This is evidence, Judge.
Is it significant at all that no other members of the family were targeted?
Under Ninth Circuit precedent, no, Your Honor, because those individuals are not similarly situated. It's interesting that the immigration judge relied on the fact that Mr. Dihar, his own family, were still living and okay in Nayarit. It's his ex-partner and his little girl and his stepson. These individuals have no presumed knowledge of Manuel's location. So the fact that those family members weren't targeted in order to get to Manuel's location is really irrelevant. The same is true for the mother. The mother lives in Colima, which we know that Manuel eventually fled there because we have inside information. But that doesn't mean that the cartel is going to know that he's now with the mother. So weaving all these other things in order to find no evidence that a reason, any reason that Mr. Dihar was targeted was because of his familial relationship, it simply cannot stand. The record compels otherwise. Additionally, turning to CAT, while I have just a moment, if I may, Your Honors. Regarding acquiescence, the immigration judge ignored dispositive testimony regarding past government acquiescence, future probability of torture, and internal relocation. I want to talk to you for just a moment and highlight to the court who Dr. Shirk is, because the immigration judge discounted his testimony as speculative. Dr. Shirk has testified 3 times to our Senate and House. He has a $5 million contract with the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice. He's advised the CIA, the Department of Justice, and the CIA. Our entire government relies on this individual for his expert opinion. And the immigration judge in this case discounted all of his testimony as speculative. What is speculative? Speculative is when we have no basis and we're guessing about what's going to happen. Dr. Shirk provided numerous examples of why he came to the conclusion that Mr. Dihar faces an almost certain likelihood of future torture and an over 80% likelihood that the government would turn a blind eye to that. And in her decision, she does not address these things. Instead, she finds that Dr. Shirk's testimony alone does not establish acquiescence, and then later concludes that because the Marines were in the area, it shows that perhaps they were able to assist Mr. Dihar. Interestingly, the immigration judge does not include and incorporate numerous areas of the record. Specifically, if I could turn the court's attention to the congressional research report that corroborates Dr. Shirk's testimony that even if the military had shown up and tried to help Mr. Dehar, they would not have helped him. This is our own Congress's report that the immigration judge's decision does not include. And under Cole versus Holder, under the CAT regulation, anytime we have highly persuasive, dispositive evidence that the immigration court doesn't include or consider, we have to vacate.
These are very strong arguments if we were reviewing de novo, but we're not. And the IJ explained, particularly on the military, the whole taking them into the grove when the military was in the area, his explanation that, well, maybe the military was with another gang, that was one of the things she identified as speculative. Why isn't that supported by substantial evidence? Why wasn't that a permissible conclusion to draw about his testimony on that point?
Because the record says otherwise, Your Honor. Dr. Shirk's testimony, I mean, not only is he a country conditions expert, it's not speculative when he's basing it on extensive research, so discounting it as that is improper. But the report that's in the record that's from our Congress special reports. I have it in my notes. Let me find them. What I'll do, if it's okay with the court, is I want to preserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, and I want to answer your question, if that's okay, Judge, once I get my notes sorted, okay? Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Iverson?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Julie Iverson, and I represent the United States. There's no doubt that the harm that Mr. Dehar described in his declaration to the agency was severe. That can't be minimized, and it's not in dispute by the agency. However, Congress, through the INA, has not seen fit to provide someone in Mr. Dehar's situation with relief or protection, no matter how severe, absent a showing for asylum or withholding that the harm was on account of a protected ground or for protection under the Convention Against Torture, consent or acquiescence by public officials. The agency found Mr. Dehar did not demonstrate he was persecuted on account of a protected ground or that public officials will acquiesce to his torture.
Can you address the point about Rinaldo, that the record is really fairly thin? It comes down to these few lines on Administrative Record 156. What does it say about Rinaldo?
What Mr. Dehar testified to about Rinaldo was that he was another person held in captivity at the same time, and that they were released at the same time. And when Rinaldo was released, the cartel asked or told him to provide information about the whereabouts of Manuel. Mr. Dehar also testified that Rinaldo was not related to him, and also Rinaldo was not related to Manuel. So the testimony was basically that another individual who was not related to either of them was asked to provide information on Manuel's whereabouts.
Is there anything in the record about why Rinaldo was captured in the first place? Or what they said to him during his captivity? Nothing?
No, Your Honor. The only evidence in the record regarding Rinaldo is Mr. Dehar's own testimony that he was unrelated and that the cartel also asked Rinaldo for information about Manuel's whereabouts. And the agency relied on that in addition to the fact that none of the other family members of Manuel or Mr. Dehar seemed to be targeted by the cartel. And they use that as objective evidence that there was another reason besides the family membership for the cartel's interest in Mr. Dehar. And Mr. Dehar notably lived in the same residence as Manuel. They were roommates, and his cousin Manuel was a drug dealer. So the inference that the agency made based on these objective facts, including that the cartel also asked Rinaldo about Manuel's whereabouts, and also that no other family members were targeted, the inference that the agency made was that the reason the cartel was going, was had interest in Mr. Dihar was not because of his family membership and his relationship to Manuel, but because he, perhaps because of his proximity to Manuel, might have information about where Manuel was located. So
now would family membership have to be the exclusive reason for them to have picked up Manuel and or Mr. Dihar and treated him as they did, and then set him out to find Manuel?
Under the, with respect to asylum, it would have to be one, the protected ground would have to be one central reason, at least one central reason. This court has found with respect to withholding of removal, a protected ground would have to be a reason for any past harm or feared harm. And while there is evidence that the cartel knew that they were related and called him his cousin on numerous occasions, that's their reference to him as his cousin is only evidence that they knew he was his cousin. It's not evidence that they sought to harm him, to persecute him, because he was his cousin.
But counsel, didn't they in fact, Singal, according to his testimony, in fact single him out for extra beatings? And and when the boss came on that really major awful night, the boss asked for Manuel. He didn't ask for anybody else. And because he was, he asked for Dihar because he was Manuel's cousin. And in fact, the threat that was given to him versus the request to Rinaldo was a significant magnitude difference here. I mean, Dihar was told his family was going to be killed if he didn't help trap his cousin.
So Mr. Dihar's proximity, the inference that the agency made and which substantial evidence supports and the record does not compel a contrary conclusion, is that he's also roommates and lives with the person and in addition to being his cousin.
Do you understand? I mean, it constantly amazes me, like how in the Mexican culture, familial relationships are like of a premium, paramount. I know there's not evidence in the record of this, but being that relationship is of a special class in that culture, that you're a cousin as opposed to an acquaintance.
Well, as Ms. Walsh stated during her time, when she was asked about why they weren't targeting other family members, she said they weren't similarly situated because they had no presumed knowledge of Manuel's location. So the thing that the cartel is interested in, or at least that the inference that the agency made, which was reasonable and a reasonable fact finder could make that inference, is that they were after his whereabouts and that the family membership is, their use of the word cousin and calling him cousin is just evidence that they had awareness he was the cousin, and not that they were targeting him because of that, as opposed to the fact that he was in proximity to that person and might have knowledge about his whereabouts.
But it's not just proximity. Trust is another big part of that familial relationship, and that he might be entrusted with knowledge about Manuel because of that relationship.
That might be one inference that is made, and while another fact finder could have made that inference and could have made that conclusion, and it could have been supported by substantial evidence, this fact finder made a different inference, and the record does not compel a contrary conclusion. So it really comes down to the standard of review here, which is very deferential. With respect to your question,
am I right that they said if you don't help us find Manuel, we're going to injure your family?
That's what Mr. Dihar testified to.
Well, it, don't we have to accept that as being true?
But I don't believe that that indicates that they were going after Manuel because he was Dihar. That they were going after Dihar because he was related to Manuel.
But if they didn't say something similar, at least we don't know whether they did, to Ronaldo, wouldn't that suggest that family membership was important here?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I don't know why they didn't say. I don't know what the circumstances. For example, Ronaldo didn't live with Manuel, so that's something that's distinguishable. So
you wouldn't think that would be a distinction with respect to threatening the family.
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I'm not sure why the severity of the threat was different between Mr. Dihar and Reynaldo. I do know with respect to the question about why he seemed to be, or why Mr. Dihar's interpretation was that he was singled out for worse treatment by the cartel. I'd like to note that the man from Topeak probably had the worst treatment of that incident. And then the other captives also were not related.
We don't know anything about why all those other people were detained or what basis was going on with them. Let me ask you about the IJ seemed to pretty much dismiss the expert testimony out of hand. What do we make of that?
Your Honor, I
find other things more credible than, I just don't find this expert credible. And that struck me as odd. It was very dismissive.
Your Honor, I don't think he didn't find him credible. I think what the IJ noted is that his only knowledge specific to Mr. Dihar's case was based on his interview with Mr. Dihar. And while he had lots of knowledge about the background conditions of the country in general, with respect to Mr. Dihar's case, it was only based on his having spoken to him is what I believe. I don't believe it was dismissive of his expertise at all. I believe it was just focusing on the fact that his expertise was more of a general nature, whereas Mr. Dihar and he did have specific knowledge with respect to what had happened to Mr. Dihar.
In ordinary cases, civil, criminal, other cases, experts are permitted to testify about, based on their knowledge and experience, how a particular situation would be treated, and their testimony isn't discounted because they're using their expertise to bring to bear to their analysis of the situation.
I believe here, Your Honor, it was his expertise and his testimony was considered, but it was also considered in conjunction with the other objective evidence. So here, the other objective evidence is the Navy. Whenever the Navy was in the area, the cartel would gather up all the captives and go into hiding. Mr. Dihar testified that the cartel was scared of the Navy. There's also record evidence, different articles that petitioners submitted that talks about how the Navy is really sort of the government entity going after the cartels or responsible for initiating operations against the cartels. Mr. Dihar's testimony is at page 178 to 179. And then the articles are at page 338, 357, 407, which talks about the importance of the Navy in going after cartels. So the board also was looking at that evidence that every time the Navy was in the area, the cartels seemed to be scared, and they used that objective evidence to find that Mr. Dihar had not met his burden to demonstrate the requisite acquiescence. As for the number that Dr. Shirk used of there's an 80% chance that this would happen to him, that's not really a quantifiable number. It's sort of a made up guess, or, and the board's task is not just to listen to what an opinion says, but to view all of the objective evidence. And here they made the inference based on the Navy. Every time the Navy coming to in the area, they would go in hiding, that there wasn't the acquiescence. Mr. Dehar didn't testify or claim that there was any sort of corrupt official that he had any interaction with. There's really an absence of any sort of state or local official not or having some sort of involvement with the cartel. So here, again, it goes back to the standard of review. While another fact finder may find that substantial evidence supported, another fact finder could have found in Mr. Dehar's favor, that conclusion is not compelled here. Are there any other questions, Your Honors?
I don't have any more.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors. For the reasons stated today and for the reasons in our brief, we ask that the court deny the petition for review because the agency's decision is supported by substantial evidence.
All right, thank you, counsel. Ms. Wallace.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. So Judge Collins, to your question and kind of to why was the immigration judge clearly erroneous when she basically discounted Dr. Shirk's testimony. The record, so a couple of things. The record shows that Dr. Shirk didn't just review Ippolito's declaration. Instead, the declaration and the testimony again shows that Dr. Shirk states he reviewed, there's 17 paragraphs of everything that he'd reviewed leading up to the point, starting in 1996 and leading to, I think, April 29th, 2019, when the declaration was submitted. And then even between April 19th and May 8th, when the individual was, Dr. Shirk stated that he reviewed relevant country conditions evidence, including the 2018 State Department records documents that the immigration judge said contradicted Dr. Shirk's findings. So that part of the evidence, that part of the argument that he simply only reviewed one thing, which was Ippolito's declaration, is simply incorrect, as the record just refutes that.
Well, I was focusing on the rejection of his testimony about the alternative explanation for their fear of the Navy, which is quite striking in the record, the constant going into the grove and having them lie down and be covered. And he said that might be due to the Navy working for a rival organization. And the IJ pressed him on that point specifically. And he did say, I'm speculating to the extent that I don't have intelligence or specific information about the specific military garrison in question. He then explained why he would draw an inference from the country conditions that was true. But given that he admitted he didn't know that, why couldn't the IJ just say, I don't draw that inference? Isn't that permissible under substantial evidence?
No, Your Honor, because he said, I don't know the particular military garrison that was following them around. But, Your Honor, if you go down about 5-6 lines on that page of the transcript, it specifically says, I'm speculating because I don't know the exact military garrison, but I'm not speculating about this. I have personally seen cases, he says, where they have gone in.
Not speculating about the country conditions as a whole and that, different rival criminal organizations may rely on the Mexican government. But he's drawing an inference from the general knowledge to the specific situation. And that was what the IJ refused to go along with. And why do we have to compel the contrary inference here?
Yes, Your Honor, for two reasons. First, because he provided specific examples of firsthand knowledge. So when we talk about speculation, that's when it's based on nothing. Here he has an objective, a conclusion that he's reached based on his experience, and also because the country conditions reports support him. The this is really on pages 243 of the record through 247, and I'll hit the highlight reel. The National Defense, Federal Police, and the National Security Branch, CMAR, were implicated in nearly 30 cases of sexual torture just in 1 year. That's page 147. National Defense Seymour soldiers have been implicated in kidnapping for ransom, page 243. So, I mean, and I can go on. 30 Navy members are suspected of being involved in disappearances, AR 244. So when the immigration judge cherry picks pieces of the country conditions evidence and says, I decline to follow what the country conditions expert says because I believe you're speculating, but the country conditions reports support the conclusion he's providing, we have clear error. I'm out of time.
Right. Thank you very much, counsel. Dihar versus Barr is submitted.